Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly with a critical independent voice on the politics and practice of health. Hormone replacement. Is it natural? Well, it really depends on how you do it, with what sorts of hormones, and how you define natural. Strictly speaking, it is more natural to age without intervention, but it's also more natural to go to bed as soon as the sun goes down instead of sitting up and reading by a lamp. Our world isn't natural in many ways, and the stressors that we're exposed to change what happens to our natural hormone balance. Many young people have hormone distortions from increased starch and sugar in their diets and the hormones they're unwittingly exposed to in our environment. In terms of men and women aging naturally, many people have opted for enhancing their chances of having an independent and healthy maturity and living longer. Some of these enhancements include the use of various supplements, including herbs, to help with symptoms of hormone deficiency or imbalance. They're more comfortable using these natural remedies instead of hormones. So how did hormones get such a bad rap? And is it possible to use hormones that aren't disruptive? Today I want to share some information about the use of bioidentical hormones in small doses through the skin to treat a variety of problems faced by modern people of both genders and all ages. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Jeff Fawcett, Ph.D.
Thanks, Lena. The L.A. Times wins the Most Lurid Headline Award for some recent cancer research. Cancer study reindicts red processed meats. Colorectal malignancies rose by up to 50% among high consumption group. The reporter gasped at how the study showed that all it takes is 3 ounces a day if you're a man or 2 ounces a day if you're a woman to be in the high consumption group that's going to get colon cancer in 2 minutes. Impending disasters make good headlines. Like traffic accidents, they get our attention. But if you're alarmed and ready to clear out your refrigerator, don't bother. The actual research article is quite different from what appeared in the newspaper. For example, the relationship between meat consumption and colon cancer showed up mostly in men. Women were far less at risk. Not reported. And when the researchers adjusted their statistics for factors like whether someone is a smoker, the relationship got even weaker. Not reported. Still, there was some evidence that there is a risk from consuming red meat and processed meat. But get this. For the study, processed meat included things that you would expect, like bacon, hot dogs, sausage, salami, and luncheon meat. Those things that someone once said you like politics, you really don't want to see how they're made. Red meat for this study included those same processed meats. When the researchers took just what you and I would think of as red meat served as a main course, the meat cancer relationship disappeared, not reported. The researchers cited 7 European studies that found no relationship between colon cancer and fresh meat, but did with processed meat. Was the meat processed using traditional or industrial methods? Not reported. Since 1989, the European Union has banned the import of U.S. beef because industrial-raised U.S. cattle are pumped with growth hormones to fatten them up. Unlike the Americans, the Europeans were not exposed to hormone-laced meat. Not reported. You'd think this would prompt someone to ask, is the risk from the meat or from what's in it? Certainly it wouldn't be asked by the researchers. For the reporters? Not likely. They report what the researchers conclude. With suitable headlines, the health equivalent of a 10-car pileup. You read the headline and you think, red meat bad. And if you read the newspaper article, you'd be no more enlightened about what the research did and did not uncover. This is a case where we needed a traffic cop to tell us, move along, nothing to see here. A transcript of this editorial is available on the blog at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeffrey. That's very good news. I think what we discovered with Dr. Richard Cunyon is that red meat is fine. The tricky part with protein intake is to keep it down around, you know, below 8 ounces at a time. I mean, you can eat several servings in a day, but this business of eating a pound of meat at a time, which most of my listeners don't do anyway, is not so good. Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett is a political economist, writer, and health educator who produces this show with me. So, thank you for that. So let's go back to today's topic, which is natural bioidentical hormone replacement. Who, when, and how? A solo show. And let me start by explaining that, firstly, this is not a show about conventional HRT. HRT, hormone replacement treatment, is using oral doses of hormones, most of which are synthesized in a lab, but which is true of bioidenticals as well, I might add. This whole idea of natural hormones is confusing for people. But the difference between conventional HRT and the types of hormones that are being called bioidentical is that bioidentical hormones are matched to the molecular structure of the ones that we make in our bodies. So this is a very important point, because what we have discovered through many, even conventional research studies, is that these skewed molecules of hormones that have been tampered with molecularly in order to make them patentable, because you can't patent a natural substance, so a bioidentical hormone is not patentable, and obviously patented substances are more expensive and can be, they can have a special patent on something and it's their product and no one else can make it. So bioidenticals are, for all purposes, are natural in the sense of matching our molecular structure, and the conventional HRT are altered. They are, the exception to this is the horse estrogens are in fact natural hormones. That is a natural hormone. They are taken in a rather inhumane, very cruel way from pregnant mares. So I think most people who are animal rights people, and that would include me, would not buy this product if for no other reason, but there are other reasons not to use it. Horse estrogen has an additional estrogen added to it, a fourth estrogen, which is not native to humans. And we don't actually know what the deal is with that over the long haul. It does seem to cause sometimes more symptoms than a bioidentical human estrogen, which has three estrogens, just like women make, and men make two in their bodies. But this is not just a show about women. Men often find themselves in need of a little extra testosterone, and conventional hormone replacement for testosterone is often methyl testosterone, which is a synthetic, altered, skewed molecule that causes a number of problems. One way to think about how different a altered, patented hormone is from a molecularly identical or bioidentical hormone is to think about steroids. Steroids, as in, yes, the illegal ones that athletes take. That's an altered testosterone. And as you know, in high doses, it causes rages, insanity, certainly cancer, as we've seen in many athletes. And this has never been shown to be true with the use of bioidentical testosterone. Testosterone has been studied for a very long time, although the science of endocrinology, the study of hormones, the science of hormones, is a relatively new science. It's in the last 100 years or so. Early researchers did work with testosterone and estrogen and progesterone in the 40s, and what they discovered about testosterone is quite amazing. A Danish researcher did a lot of research early on. One of his books, I think the last book that he published was in 1987. I'm talking about Jan Møller. It's Moeller, although it's almost impossible to find any sightings for his work, although at the time that he was writing, his work was so esteemed and so prominent that it was very difficult for anybody to criticize his work. He was such a perfectionist, and it was so scientifically viable that it was very hard for anybody to go against him. And now his literature has all but disappeared, except for a few other doctors who are referring back to his studies. Now, I was lucky enough to get a pirated Xerox copy of his book Cholesterol, which is actually about the effect of testosterone supplementation for heart patients of both genders and its effect in repairing hypercholestinemia, where people have very high cholesterol levels, also decreasing clotting factors because testosterone is heart protective. So natural, unpatented, bioidentical testosterone, like the other hormones, has a very different effect than its brothers and sisters, which are patented and strange. The other thing that changes the way hormones affect the body is how they're delivered. And a lot of it depends on the individual, a lot of how a hormone will be metabolized and how well it will work and how someone will feel on a particular dose has to do with how well somebody's liver works or doesn't work, how their detox pathways work. So it's not always easy to anticipate dosages with somebody until you begin to very delicately see how people are. But what happens in conventional hormone replacement is that people are not tested for their levels before they're given a hormone, which will very profoundly alter the ratio of the hormones. And as we'll discover as I go along, that the ratio of hormones is really the primary thing. But the other issue is this oral versus through the skin delivery. The reason that's significant is because if you take something through the mouth, your liver has to get involved with it right away in terms of marking it for excretion or identifying it as a toxin. And in the case of a transdermal, it tends to go directly to your tissue sites to do its job. Much later down the line does it end up in the liver. So avoiding what we call first pass through the liver with transdermal hormones, that would be a patch or a cream, or in the case of testosterone, there are also these pellets that can be put under the skin. This is a safer way to take hormones because the delivery is slower and because, as I said, it doesn't put a stress on the liver. The other thing, along with testing people for dosages, is to keep the dose as low as you can go and still have some kind of effect take place. And you know, another very important issue here is who needs hormones. Really, truthfully, not everybody does. There are people who age with robust hormone levels, although what does seem to happen as people age, even if they have robust hormone levels, is that the ratio between the hormones sometimes changes. And that's worth testing again for. And when I say testing, again, the conventional method of testing is with blood. Now, it is possible to identify people's hormone levels with blood, but it is trickier because your hormones can become bound to proteins and red blood cells in your blood. The bound levels of hormones are kind of stuck in the blood, and they're not circulating where they need to go to your tissues to make you feel better. So although you may test like you have plenty of testosterone or estrogen on a test of your total estrogen or total testosterone or total progesterone, etc., when you test the free, and that's F-R-E-E, free levels, meaning that it's not bound up in the blood, it's free to move where it needs to go, what you often see is a very different story. Someone who had what appeared to be a lot of a hormone in its total form is actually low when you test the free levels. When you test with saliva or with urine, you're actually testing hormones that have already passed through tissues. A salivary gland is a gland, and, you know, obviously going through your urinary tract. It's hitting all these different tissue sites. So I personally happen to prefer the saliva testing. And I think everybody's probably heard David Zava on the air in the old days, especially with John Lee, who were very grateful for the work he did before he passed away. They have a book which I like very much about hormones, which is actually a book about breast cancer called What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Breast Cancer. But the reason I like that book the best is because it's a collaboration between David Zava and John Lee, and it's a very interesting book on hormones. There are other books that especially talk about testosterone. Eugene Shippen has a book, S-H-I-P-P-E-N, Shippen. Jonathan Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, has one, and there's even a book by a Brit who worked with Jan Mueller. His name is Carruthers, Carruthers, I don't have it in front of me, C-A-R-R-U-T-H-E-R-S, I believe. I think his book is called The Hormone Revolution, and his book is also very interesting because of his experience working with Jan Mueller. So those are some books to refer to. So testing is quite important. People, in terms of identifying who needs the hormone, certainly people who are experiencing obstreperous menopausal symptoms, women who are having hot flashes, night sweats, cognitive symptoms, a loss of libido, energy, can't sleep, mood is terrible, their bone mass is going down, they're losing their secondary sex characteristic, which is their waist. They're becoming barrel-shaped. These women may, also dryness in the vaginal canal, may well need hormones. Which ratio of hormones they need is a question. It isn't always an estrogen lack or deficiency that causes these symptoms. Sometimes it's a lack of progesterone in relationship to estrogen. In men, in andropause, really similar symptoms with the lack of the obvious ones, but a loss of vitality, a loss of libido, energy is down, sleep is poor, mood is dreadful. In fact, men who are low in testosterone tend to be moodier, more apathetic, and more irritable than men with lots of testosterone. So the old sort of mythology about high testosterone making men aggressive is really more about the synthetic testosterones or the steroid hormones that we use for bodybuilders, or that some people use for bodybuilders. Bone mass goes down in men as well as women. Men also have a lot of heart problems, and their prostate, in with the loss of testosterone, their prostate tends to become enlarged because There isn't enough testosterone to contest the amount of estrogen that men tend to pick up as they age. And the prostate, being very similar tissue to the uterus before the fetus differentiates itself, is very sensitive to estrogens, and it appears that the estrogens are the problem. So low testosterone can cause a lot of prostate problems. Cognitive symptoms of both, and the body mass index changes with loss of testosterone in both genders. It's harder to hang on to muscle, and you tend to pick up weight and fat and lose good lean mass. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm doing a solo show today about hormone replacement, who, when, and how, in somewhat that order. Moving on from the issue of who needs it, there are issues for younger people as well. I'm sorry to say that I see low testosterone levels in young men as well, increasingly. And I believe that this has something to do with stress, because one of the things that Jan Mueller discusses in the book in Cholesterol is that having a lot of stress that someone is not recovering well from increases the amount of cortisol, which is the longer acting stress hormone that our body makes to prepare us for a fight or flight situation. Our body, not knowing the difference between just working too hard and sleeping too little and running away from a predator, overproduces cortisol, and then in some cases underproduces it in a way to protect the tissues. But too much cortisol in both genders interrupts and interrupts both the ratio of the hormones, but also blocks the protective hormones like progesterone and testosterone. So in young men, not only exposure to xenoestrogens in the environment, but the corrosive effects of unrelenting stress will also contest and lower their testosterone. Now, another thing to consider when talking about this issue of who needs hormones is, with men, is unfortunately it looks as though the vasectomies that men are getting may in fact not be working out quite the way we had hoped. They may not be benign. The only person I've found that really discusses this again is Dr. Carruthers in his book, and again I think it's called The Testosterone Revolution. His book is published by HarperCollins. It's a British version of it, but I think that you can Google him and find his work. And in his book, he discusses what he sees with vasectomies, which is honestly a lowering of testosterone. It does appear to me that if you replace testosterone in these men, it usually works out pretty well. In odd cases, men have some actual problems later with their testicles in relationship to the change that happens after the vasectomy. But I certainly see men who have vasectomies who don't have problems, too. But it's certainly worth considering checking testosterone levels in men who have one. And when women, with women, the thing I see in young women, again, is the, you know, this issue of loss of balance is the estrogen to progesterone ratio. We've talked about in men the testosterone to estrogen ratio. In women, it's the ratio between estrogen and progesterone. And then, of course, testosterone is important for women as well, but particularly for bone mass. But women, especially young women, can have a real disruption of their hormones, especially this balance between estrogen and progesterone, by eating too many foods that raise their blood sugars, drinking sugared sodas, drinking fruit juices with fructose in it, drinking these latte drinks that have high fructose corn syrup or honey in them, eating lots of carbohydrates and starches, and not having enough protein in their diets can alter the blood sugar. And when the blood sugar gets high like that, what you see is the insulin level getting high as well. Now, insulin is a hormone in its own right, and it moves in when the blood sugar is high to move the sugar molecules into the cells to use for energy, but it can't always move all of them, and sometimes if the insulin level stays high too much, too often, too high, a lot of the times it has two effects on women. One is in both genders it tends to blunt the message of the insulin. Eventually the tissues kind of think, you know, the message is kind of like the boy who cried wolf. They're hearing it so loud and so often they become desensitized, and that's called insulin resistance or metabolic syndrome. In men, it lowers testosterone. In women, the extra insulin stimulates their ovaries to overproduce testosterone, which is a good player, but they become very high in testosterone and they don't make any progesterone. Progesterone is responsible for maturing eggs in the ovaries, and if the ovaries don't have that maturing influence, those little eggs get produced and turn into cysts, and you get a very painful condition called polycystic ovary syndrome. In some cases, the young woman will be overweight. In some cases, she'll be slender. Some of these women have high testosterone symptoms of greasy skin and hair and have acne. They often don't have regular menstrual periods because there's no progesterone on board to balance things out. This is a situation where a lifestyle changes the hormone balance, but still may be necessary to intervene with some natural transdermal progesterone. A lot of times doctors want to use birth control pills for this. Synthetic hormones do not work the same way as natural, and the place where we see them not working the same way the most is with progesterone. The few brave people who have taken on the project of testing natural progesterone versus its synthetic have discovered. Now, the problem here is that drug companies do pay for most hormone studies. That's sort of natural. They probably should pay for the studies, but they have always used synthetic progestins, Provera, etc., when they do these tests. And time after time after time, what we see is a bad result. We see an increase in cancer. We see an increase in even clotting and the heart isn't protected, etc., etc. And these few brave souls who managed to raise enough money to do their own testing using natural transdermal progesterone saw amazing things. Some of these studies you can find in what your doctor may not tell you about breast cancer, but a few of them that are worth mentioning is Dr. Hermsmeyer at the Oregon Primate Center did some tests with ovarianized and hysterectomized monkeys. Not very pleasant sort of testing. It makes me sad to think of it, but he precipitated heart attacks in these animals and was able to stop it with the use of progesterone, natural progesterone and estrogen together. But when he used synthetic progestins with the estrogen, it blocked the estrogen's heart protective capacity. Now, it appears also that progesterone is more heart protective than estrogen, I might add. And I don't know whether he's gone on to do... He didn't kill the monkeys, incidentally. But I think he's gone on, and I haven't seen the results, but tried to do tests alone with progesterone. But it was very clear that the synthetic progestins did not have the protective effects that the natural, transdermal, bioidentical progesterone had. The other amazing test was with people who were having lumpectomies for cancerous lumps in the breast, and some of the control groups were given a gel that had progesterone in it, and the ones that used the progesterone gel when they had the lumpectomy, there was no infusion of cells. There was no extra cell proliferation around the lump. It stopped the proliferation, and in the ones that had a gel that didn't have progesterone, there was proliferation and cells were dividing. So it's protective of the breast as well as other tissues. Natural progesterone also has a calming effect. It boosts the GABA receptors in your brain, and it has a balancing or calming effect for women. Estrogen is excitatory, and synthetic progestins have none of this effect. In fact, they tend to cause a lot of side effects that natural progesterone does not. For men, progesterone is important because when their estrogen levels get really high and their prostate becomes a problem, the tiny little amounts of progesterone that men make are insufficient to balance the estrogen. Dr. Lee wrote a monograph, which I think is still available on his johnleemd.com, L-E-E, johnleemd.com website. I think you can still buy the monograph about prostate cancer, where he describes using really, really tiny doses of transdermal progesterone for men with enlarged prostate or even prostate cancer. We're talking about little doses of maybe 5 milligrams. So, because you don't want to contest the testosterone, you just want to contest the estrogen. So that gives you some sense of who might need hormone replacements. I guess, again, it's anybody who is having really uncomfortable symptoms of hormone imbalances. And some of them, as I said, are intuitive because you're looking at balancing the excitatory effects of estrogen with progesterone. So there's mood changes, certainly women with PMS, young women, women who are infertile, although that isn't the only reason someone's infertile. Sometimes it's a thyroid problem, another hormone. In men, extreme apathy and depression in a young man and lack of sexual desires is often related to low testosterone and can be corrected, as I said, with preparations used through the skin. I think what I want to do is take a brief musical break, and when I come back, I want to talk more about the fears of cancer and other things that we've seen in the media that have make people afraid of using hormones, and I want to go over the WHI study, both the first and second, and sort of discuss with you what was actually in there and what the implications might be, and talk some more about men. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show alone today on hormone replacement, who, how, and I don't know, I've even forgotten the title of my show, who, when, and how. These, again, bioidentical hormones. Please stay with me, and I will be right back.
Hey, everybody, let's have fun. You only live but once, and when you're dead, you're done. You better let the good time roll, baby. Well, let's get it on, mama. And I don't care if you're old. Get yourself together, let the good time roll. Sit there mumbling, talking trash. If you want to have a ball, you gotta go and spend some cash. And let the good time roll, baby. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. And I don't care if you're old. Get yourself together, let the good time roll.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, doing a solo show today on hormones, when, who, and how. And there's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. And our information number is 707-874-2772. So, cancer is, I think, one of the main things that have scared people off of using hormones. Now, the whole story of conventional HRT and it being pushed on absolutely everybody, especially women, without any regard to their hormone levels to begin with, or the balance between the hormones, and the use of these non-native estrogens and these non-bioidentical progesterones and synthetic testosterones and overdosing and on, has been a real fiasco. And there's no question that using hormones that way is not advisable. But there are other ways to do it. So what is the truth about cancer and hormones? Well, if we look directly at the studies that were done that caused all this hysteria, please remember, first of all, that the WHI study that came out several years ago that warned everybody off of using hormones and made doctors very, very afraid of using them, was not the first study that showed that synthetic progestins might be countering the protective effects of estrogen. So, but they yanked the women off of the study and said it was too dangerous and that clotting increased and cancer increased. It was just a terrible thing and terrible, terrible. Well, that first study was using horse estrogen orally. Everybody got the same dose. Nobody was tested beforehand to see if they even needed estrogen. And they were using the synthetic oral progestin. Now, progesterone, as well as estrogen, really likes to be sent through the skin. It's really a better delivery system, and synthetic progestins are crap. So that study is not at all surprising. There was plenty of research that had been done before that showed the same thing, and it's really outrageous how much money was spent on that study when it was suddenly altered. And it's the only end game I can think of politically for this is that it's now making it possible for pharmaceutical companies to sell other drugs to men and women as they age to protect them from their symptoms that are actually hormone deficiency symptoms. But now we can give you bone medications for your bone, which can cause all kinds of side effects and don't always work. In fact, seldom work when that isn't the underlying problem, and antidepressants, which are causing a lot of problems. We now see the FDA, not just in children, but in adults as well. So the first WHI study was terribly flawed in its design. So they went back to their credit and did a study with estrogen alone. And I remember opening the newspaper and seeing the headlines that said, estrogen doubles clotting. And since we started doing the newsletter, I took it upon myself to really comb through the study in every detail to see exactly what they had done, because you can design a study to give you any effect that you want, actually, by the design of it. And once again, what we see here is the use of horse estrogens at one dose. No, you can't give a great huge number of women one dose of estrogen. They're not all going to need the same dose of estrogen. These were women who had had hysterectomies. And yes, you can sort of suspect that women who have had hysterectomies may well need estrogen, but some of these women may have had their ovaries. So it's not clear whether they all needed estrogen or not. Also, women varied a lot in their needs. And this was without the balancing effects of progesterone. Well, there is no surprise here that estrogen has a increased clotting effect. This has actually also been shown by the use of synthetic estrogens and progesterones, both in birth control pills, who increase clotting, among other things. So the surprise here was that I went and looked up how much normal clotting events are in what they were using as a sample, 100,000 people. Normal clotting in 100,000 people is a tenth of a percent. So yes, it doubled to 0.2%. But having it go up a tenth of a percent in 100,000 people is not earth-shaking, although you still don't want to see that happen. But we know that estrogen has a increased clotting effect when it's not contested by hormones that reduce clotting like estrogen and progesterone. The thing that was really amazing about this is what they didn't report. What they didn't report, among other things, they said that there was an increase in bone mass, which is a surprise, because we didn't know whether estrogen really increased bone mass or not, and thought was that it just delayed bone mass. But the bone mass was much better. But here's the kicker. By almost half, the women who were using estrogen alone were protected from breast cancer. Well, this just blew me away. And it wasn't reported, because statistical significance is 0.5%, and this was 0.6%, so they never said anything about it. They reported on the clotting, nothing about the reduction, almost half of breast cancer. This is amazing, because all of us who have been studying hormones and looking at their effects assumed that estradiol, the strongest of the three estrogens women makes, is in fact vulnerable to pollutants in the atmosphere. And if it's not very diligently balanced with progesterone, that it would have an increased effect in terms of cancer. It would be provocative, because we see higher cancer rates among women who are obese, who have a lot of estrogen. Well, let me not get too complicated here, but it turns out partly that women who are obese, that their fat cells actually make a lot of hormones that are provocative for cell division and cell proliferation. And also the particular estrogen that they tend to produce the most of is estrone, which, like estrogen, is maybe a little more provocative. But even so, what we're seeing here is that it in fact maybe isn't provocative. In fact, it's protective. Well, not only was this not reported in the paper, but the other thing that's really heartbreaking about this is that what's been ignored for a long time is something that several researchers who I've had on the show have said, which is that all hormones increase cell individuation. Now, don't let your brain explode when you hear that term. All it means is that cancer cells are cells that, when you look under a microscope, you don't know whether you're looking at a breast cell or a liver cell. You don't know what you're looking at. It's just a cancer cell. If you look at a breast cell or a liver cell, they're very different until they turn to a cancer cell. So they lose individuation. And what hormones tend to do is maintain cell individuation. So they are protective in terms of cancer. Yes, people get cancer when their hormones are out of balance with each other. Yes, they do tend to be vulnerable to that, but we don't actually know all the mechanisms. What we do know is that people who have robust hormone levels in good ratio survive cancer and tend not to have return of cancer. Does this not make you wonder about hormone blocking pharmaceuticals like Lupron and tamoxifen? Does that not make you kind of pause on that issue for a moment? If the hormones need to be balanced to protect people from cancer, ought we not block them completely? Good question, huh? So what I'm sort of insinuating here is that women who have been so scared off after a breast lump has been removed, sometimes the breast lump is not even a real cancer. Sometimes it's a calcification, like DCIS in situ, you know, calcification thing, which has not been shown to turn into cancer. And they've been irradiated, and they've been given tamoxifen, and they're taking off their hormones, and they're afraid to take anything. Well, take heart. The WHI study, completely conventional. If you get a copy of it and read it, you'll see incidence of breast cancer went down by almost half. Wow. And that's without progesterone. And we know that you need progesterone when you take estrogen. Yes, taking hormones when they're gone may be unnatural, but if you're going to mimic nature, which always seems to be the safest way to go, then you want to replace things in the ratio that we have them in our bodies, which is lots of progesterone, a little bit of estrogen, and a little bit of testosterone for women, and with men, a lot of testosterone, a tiny bit of progesterone, and a little bit of estrogen for their brains. Another important point, women who have been hysterectomized need testosterone. So in these women who actually had some improvement in they had more clotting events, they weren't fatal, but their heart, number of women with heart attacks or events or problems went down also. And this is again without the anti-clotting effect of testosterone, which is heart protective. And women with hysterectomies always lose testosterone. It's one of the reasons that they tend to put on a lot of weight, get very depressed, lose a lot of bone, is the testosterone. It's not just the estrogen that needs to be replaced. So it's astonishing. The WHI study with estrogen alone is amazing. And actually, it isn't bad news. It's good news, because we knew that estrogen was clotty. We knew it needed to be balanced with other hormones. But even not balanced with other hormones, it had a number of protective effects, none of which were reported in the newspaper. Gosh, what is up with that? Okay, so now, I had mentioned that there are several estrogens working in a woman's body. They exist in a men's body, too, in smaller amounts. And again, estrogen for men is thinking. Is that ironic? I like it, don't you? Men need estrogen to think. And another reason not to do a chemical castration on men after a prostate cancer thing. So estrogens, there are three estrogens. The estradiol is the one that people think about, E-S-T-R-I-O-L. I think that's it. No, that's estriol. E-S, don't make, actually, you know, better for me not to spell it. E-S-T-R-A-D-I-O-L, estradiol, estradiol. It's abbreviated as E2 for the second estrogen. It is, in fact, a very strong estrogen. Ooh, excuse me. One of the problems with solo shows is if your throat goes, you can't hide it. Estradiol is a strong estrogen, and it is very good for reducing symptoms of estrogen deficiency. It's the reason that it's isolated and used, because it will eliminate hot flashes in the right dose and can influence in some women having their tissues stay moist. And as we found out, all these other good effects too. But there's also estrone. Estrone is a bit provocative in some tests, although I don't know that we know the truth about estrone. But and then we have estriol, E-S-T-R-I-O-L. That's the E-S-T-R-I-O-L one. And that's E3. And E2 and E3, in my mind, are the two that you need to think about, because when you replace both of those, things kind of run well, and you don't really need the extra estrone. In fact, if I understand correctly, the E2 and the E3 together will make a little estrone. And also testosterone replacement will give you a little estrone. So I don't think you need to replace that. The reason for using E3 is it's a very weak estrogen. It's an estrogen that goes up fairly high during pregnancy, and so it protects the tissues. It's really very protective. That's one of the reasons it gets high during pregnancy. It likes very much to be applied directly to the vaginal mucosa, and is the estrogen of choice for vaginal dryness. The vaginal lining will only take up as much as it needs, and any more than that, it just won't. So it you don't overdose yourself. And Dr. Henry Lemon, who studied estriol for many, many years, who only just died maybe 5 years ago, never found any problems with estriol in his population. You know, obviously, if you take non-physiologic doses of any hormone, you're going to feel awful. But the usual dose that's been used in Europe for several decades for postmenopausal women is just 0.5 milligrams used 2 or 3 days a week for vaginal dryness, or you could use half that dose every day. And it works very well. Estriol also increases collagen in the skin on the face if you use a very low dose on the skin on your face, like a 0.25 or a 0.3. Very, very tiny little dose. What I would recommend is if women use it intervaginally, that they want to use it on their skin too, that if they're using estradiol, that they reduce the estradiol so they don't get overdosed. But estradiol might be for someone who has really aggressive symptoms. This is where testing comes in. You want to see. You may not need the estrogen. You may just need progesterone. You may need testosterone. You don't know what you need. But one of the funny things about estrogen replacement is that I think people are coming around to this, but what I discovered is that you can use just the tiniest little dose, and it's such a tiny dose that when I recommend it to people, they're compounding pharmacies, which is the place to get bioidentical hormones, because you get them compounded, although there's a few brands on the market that are bioidentical, when they go in with a suggestion of a dose of maybe a total of 0.025 for the entire day, split into two doses, that the pharmacies say, but that's, you won't get any effect from that. It's too low. And in fact, that's sometimes not only enough, but it may even be too much for somebody who has plenty of estrogen. So these are very small doses, much smaller than anybody's ever considered. There's a zero in front of the estrogen dose, 0.025 milligrams, possibly done in two doses of 0.0125, you know, twice a day. Now, that's, I'm not telling you that everybody in my listening audience needs that much estrogen. I'm saying that that's a low point to start with. People should always be tested before and after, or if they're already taking something, test and see where you are. Test. Don't have to do it forever. Eventually, you'll begin to feel what it feels like to be on the right dose, but don't overdose. The estriol is a little higher. It's 0.5, but it's only a couple days a week, or half, which would be 0.25, or on the skin, 0.25, mixed with hand cream. Estrogen, estradiol, and estriol together are going to potentiate each other, so you would use less estrogen than what I just suggested if you're adding the estriol in. The triests and the biests, in my experience, over-estrogenize women. That's what I see. And, you know, what happens is your dose curve, your response curve is very, very sharp. It goes up. There's a sweet spot at the top. If you overdose, you start going right down the other side. And if you go down the other side, what do you think happens? You have low estrogen symptoms. Go figure. You shut down your receptors. Too much estrogen makes you feel like you have no estrogen at all. Hot flashes, the whole works. It's too much estrogen. Progesterone dose varies. It's going to be anywhere from 5 to 30 milligrams a day through the skin. Women are different. they're all going to metabolize it differently. Do it. It's good to take these hormones twice a day so you get an even amount, or use a patch. I think the two bioidentical patches that are out there are Vivelle and Clamera. I think there may be other ones, but you ask for bioidentical. For men, testosterone replacement doesn't have to be a large cudgel full of this stuff. It doesn't. You don't want a shot. It's going to give you a peak in a valley. In the same way with women, you don't want an under-the-tongue hormone because you get a sudden high rise of hormones and then you have it go down very sharply. With men and testosterone, I've seen people do very well with between 6 and 12 milligrams a day in one or two doses, depending on how much they need. It's usually plenty. Some men need something different, like those pellets under the skin. There are other situations that come up, but most men will do fine on a low dose of testosterone, 6 milligrams, 12 milligrams. Sounds like a lot compared to estrogen. It probably is. I think both sexes benefit from DHEA, but you should always test your level first. Women should never take high doses of DHEA. You don't know where it's going to go. It's one of those hormones that's high up on the list of things being made from cholesterol, your hormones being made from cholesterol. So for women, start with maybe 5 milligrams twice a day, maybe go up to as much as 20 milligrams a day. Once a day in the morning, not twice a day. Men can take more like 25 or higher, but you got to be careful because if you overdose, it can turn into something you don't want. It can overestrogenize men. It can overtestosteronize women. So I don't think that's a word. So test your levels. Pregnenolone is a hormone that's ahead. It's above DHEA. It's made first. Somebody described it as throwing a stick in a tributary and hoping it goes down the waterway you're after. My experience with it is you can't tell where it's going to go, and it kind of seems like it's harder to deal with than DHEA, which has the benefits of reducing cancer at the right dose and certainly improving bone mass and increasing vitality. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman doing a solo show on hormones. Now, before I completely run out of time here, remember two things. One is young people may have exposure to hormones in the environment or dietary indiscretions that are causing disruptions. Diet first. Always switch to a low-carb diet first and give yourself some time, but add in the hormones if you need them. Maybe you'll get lucky and you won't need them after a while. Stress just really messes with your hormone levels. So recovery is the key there, if you can get it. Adrenals, should you treat adrenals? Boy, that's a hard one. I think the main way to treat the adrenals is to get sufficient protein and vegetables in your diet, so you're eating a really nutrient-dense diet, and to get enough rest and exercise, and to stay away from stimulants if your adrenals feel like they're shot. But your adrenals may not be shot. It could be thyroid, or thyroid could not be thyroid. It could be adrenals. So it all affects each other. And if your thyroid is low, you won't utilize your sex hormones right, even if you're using them. So you do need to test your thyroid as well. And again, free levels of T3 and T4 in this case. Thyroid, free T3, free T4. Okay, so that's a mouthful. Remember the diet considerations, protein, eating vegetables, eating enough crucifers, not a bunch of raw ones, but cooked ones. They really do protect you from, they keep you metabolizing your hormones in a healthy way. I don't think you have to take capsules of freeze-dried crucifers. The really high doses sometimes can cause people to get an interference with their thyroid, so you have to be careful with that. People sometimes give these products to women who they think are high estrogen. I think balancing estrogen with progesterone and checking levels again and eating crucifers and getting exercise will help. Getting rid of sugar and starch problems will help. So, you know, leading the good life can be fun. You know, it isn't just curbing your impulses to be wild and crazy. It can be fun to take care of yourself. It's an art. If you think of it as a job, you'll be bored. But if you think of it as art, it's like tending a garden. Remember, too, that everybody's metabolism is different. Everybody's liver clears differently. If anyone comes at you with a single dose issue without really reviewing your situation very diligently, you're in trouble. People should be tested. I test people all the time because you can't always anticipate what's going to be. You sometimes can by their symptoms, but not always. But you also can't anticipate what people are going to feel like on different doses and how they're going to react to different hormones. But transdermal is usually the best way, and bioidentical is the best way. Geez, remember, your doctors and your pharmacies are going to tend to overdose, although most doctors and pharmacies are now afraid of hormone replacement. But I've noticed that some compounding pharmacies are still resisting this idea of using the low-dose hormones. They just don't believe that it does anything. And in my experience, when I look at saliva tests, it certainly does. It does just fine. The body tends to want to balance itself if you give it a half of a chance. And that's why I don't argue with people who say that they don't want to use hormones. The only thing I say to them is to look at the balance of their hormones before they make that decision, because it may be that the type of alteration you need is really tiny, and it may be, like with women, just a tiny bit of progesterone, and again with men it may be a really tiny dose of testosterone, and there's no shame in that. Women using estrogen can use it throughout the month, but they should go off for 1 week a month when they're using progesterone. If women are young and they're still ovulating and having periods, progesterone gets used 2 weeks out of the month from day 12 to something like day 26. And again, the dose will vary wildly. If you're dealing with a woman with really bad endometriosis, you're going to need really large doses of progesterone for a while, maybe forever. Much higher, maybe even 40 to 60 milligrams a day. But only if you know that that's what you've got as a problem, and you test your levels to see how you're metabolizing it, and you watch your symptoms. Estrogen's excitatory. Testosterone's excitatory. Progesterone is calming. DHEA is energizing. I'm trying to think if I'm leaving anything off here. The cortisol issue is testable as well. People often call me and say that they have adrenal fatigue, and in fact, I think that isn't what's going on. Often what's going on is something maybe even more complicated, which is too bad. We talked with Richard Cunyon, and we discovered that there are these methylation pathways that are important in terms of energy, and I don't want to try to redo what he did, but it's enough to understand that some people have either genetic problems with methylation through their family line, and they're not utilizing nutrients properly, which doesn't protect them from cancer and heart disease. Much more of an issue is nutrient deficiencies, folic acid, etc. And he was talking about TMG, which I might also just warn people, does, it, for most people, really very much improve their epinephrine path, your speed path. So if somebody decides to try this based on having heard it on the show, you might also consider using a really tiny dose. Okay, well, I've got to wrap it up. And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Jeff Fawcett, PhD. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.